Good morning, comrades. You are listening to WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning, Comrade. It's Tuesday. You know what that means. Listen to Good Morning, Comrade, 8 o'clock every week. WHIVFM, WHIVFM.org/listen. You can also get more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. Today in the studio, we have Jeff. We have Aaron.
Oh, hi.
We have Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
And we have a very special guest. We just talked live on the radio for 2 hours, Jenny Yanez.
Hey, good morning.
So, yeah, we're here. It's today is officially, I suppose, Super Tuesday.
It is.
Yeah. So that would be, we're recording on Monday. The show releases on Tuesday. And it's going to be a wild time, I think.
It's going to be a stressful time, I think.
It's already been pretty stressful. But we're going to be stressing without Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar because they're all just kind of circling around.
I know.
Joseph Biden.
I have a colleague at work slash close friend slash someone you both know who we bonded over our just sheer hatred of Pete Buttigieg.
Now who are you going to hate?
No, that's a thing. He's a Warren supporter. And I think we might get into a fight. I think we might, because before it was like just funny memes making fun of Pete, and now it's like, oh, you're voting for Warren. Okay, cool. Well, but don't do that.
That's kind of the thing. Like, I'm really having a hard time. Like, poor Aaron has to hear the brunt of this at home, but I'm like really having a hard time, like, trying to be rational about how much I hate Elizabeth Warren, and I mean that from like the cockles of my heart. Like, I genuinely like hate her. And it's the idea of, okay, so Pete and Amy dropped out. Pete, as we speak right now, we're recording on Monday night. He's at a Joe Biden rally. And, okay, that's fine. Like, I expect that from Pete. I expect that from Amy. The reason they're dropping out is to Super Tuesday came way too fast after Biden's victory in South Carolina. And now they're trying to pull out all the stops. Maybe they can, you know, bump Biden in certain states to viability and try to make it easier to steal from Bernie at the convention, because Biden's not going to get, he's not going to get a majority. Like, Bernie's still on track to get the majority of votes. So now the play is like, well, let's try to get him viable in states by siphoning Klobuchar and Buttigieg's votes and then bump him to 15%. We knew that was coming. That was just a matter of time. Was it going to be? It was shocking that it was yesterday. I'm talking, you know, it's Tuesday today when you're hearing this, and then Monday is when it happened. So for us, it only happened a few hours ago. But that was shocking. But we knew this eventually was going to happen. What it did not expect to happen was Elizabeth Warren, who has less delegates than both of those people combined. She's got like 8. Yeah. Less delegates than both combined. To stay in the race, the only reason why is to become a spoiler to her quote unquote air quotes friend Bernie Sanders.
Big friend.
I hate her for that. Like, it's been such an interesting journey. Like, watching her going from
It's a Bernie journey.
Seriously, yep. Watching her going from politician, from progressive politician, you know, she had her come to Jesus moment. She was a Republican, a Reaganite until her 40s, and then becoming a Democrat is like, yay, like, she's progressive, to becoming like, she's the progressive politician who like lies about stuff, like being Native American and getting fired for being pregnant. Like, she lies about stuff, but that's okay. Like, everybody lies. Like, whatever. It's dumb. You're trying to tell a story. Everybody tells stories and embellishes them. It's just kind of dumb. I don't know why she does it. Whatever. Her heart's still in the right place. To, like, the politician with really bad instincts. Like, man, you've got really bad instincts. Like, your story is that you went into politics because Joe Biden's bankruptcy bill was screwing people over. Like, that was your story. And now you get in front of Joe Biden on a stage and you go completely gloves off. But then you want to attack your so-called friend Bernie Sanders. And, you know, maybe you hired all these Hillary and Kamala people and they got in your head. Who knows? Like, whatever. Like, you just have really bad political instincts. So this isn't going to turn out bad or good for you. But I still, like, now you're in the race with no support but a super PAC. That's your only real support now is a super PAC to keep this race kicking along.
Talk about the super PAC. What she did, I thought she wasn't going to do a super PAC.
Well, she lied. That's another one thing to add to the lie.
And also, I want to chime in here because I have seen a lot of pushback about criticism of the super PAC, specifically because a lot of people think that Bernie has his own super PAC. And I do want to say, so our revolution theoretically would function similarly to a super PAC, but it doesn't currently. And it doesn't because it barely takes in any money. So if you check out Open Secrets, which is basically a nonpartisan information about super PACs, they have, I think, about $65,000 cash on hand currently, and they've only spent under $9,000 this election cycle. And that data is from January 30th, which is the last time that they kind of updated the site. So when we're talking about Elizabeth Warren's super PAC spending $9 million, if someone comes back at me with talking about our revolution, I lose my mind because $9,000 is what they've spent. They took in a lot of money around the time it was formed, around the 2016 election, but they haven't taken in much money since. And most of the money has been spent on trying to get down ballot progressives elected. So I just want to throw that out there because that has been driving me up a wall. So.
No, and I just want to say that, yeah, no, it's 100% accurate. Good for all that. Like, yeah, no, that's true. But now she's at, like, her last evolution in her political Pokemon stage is of just a bad person. Like, she's not even a bad politician anymore. You are now a bad person. And Aaron and I were talking about this earlier, and, like, I put this on God. Like, if they steal this from Bernie at the convention, not only am I not, I'm not going to vote, you know, for the president, I'm not going to vote for a Bloomberg or a Biden, which they would throw it to Biden. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not voting. Like, I'm done with the whole enterprise. And Aaron brought up good points. Like, you have to vote because of, you know, your harm mitigation and it matters in local elections. But I don't understand, like, if why is that put on? I mean, this is not rhetorical questions. So if the Democratic Party, it doesn't care about harm mitigation, because look, let's be real about what's going on. Joe Biden cannot beat Trump. And I mean, we're all biased towards Sanders here, but Joe Biden cannot beat Trump. He will not beat Trump. So their best case scenario is steal this from Bernie at the convention with Elizabeth Warren's help, siphoning off the progressive vote, and then throw it to Joe just so he can lose to Trump. So if the Democratic Party does not care about harm mitigation, why should I? I'm just a guy with a dumb podcast. Why should I? What can I do about harm mitigation when I'm fighting the very people who are supposed to convince me that I need to vote out of harm mitigation? So I'm just, like, done voting. The only thing, and I put this on God, the only election I will care about after, if they steal this from him, is whoever is primarying Elizabeth Warren. I will go to Massachusetts, knock doors, give money, make calls, do whatever I have to do. And I don't even care if he or she is to the right of her.
Okay.
I'm dead serious at this point. And just to say what I said at home, like, Aaron's going to say her bit here, and this is just the conversation we had on When to Steal Thunder. I'm crazy. Aaron is much more reasonable than I am. Yeah, Aaron is much more reasonable than I am. And she is kind of like, this is not the best. So listen to her.
Okay, so we are not going to support someone who's to the right of Elizabeth Warren in a primary. Let's just put that out there collectively. No, thank you. But I do want to talk a little bit about what we mean when we say she doesn't have good political instincts, because I think that's a pretty general and very broad phrase and can be, you know, I think a lot of people have been interpreting that as sexism. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, what do we mean when she has bad political instincts? When has she shown this? No, like, Exhibit A, gold star, neon light flashing, the DNA test. Bad political instincts, okay? She is from Oklahoma. She grew up in Oklahoma. She is a sitting senator and has a law degree taught at Harvard. And the fact that she somehow didn't understand or know the really, really terrible history of blood testing Native Americans for tribal membership is alarming. I mean, it's alarming that she didn't know about that. So either she just was ignorant to that and still and went forward, or she wasn't ignorant to it and still decided that that was a good idea. Like, okay, well, they're a small part of the population. We might as well just do this anyway. So there's that. Secondly, I feel like there's so many people have been talking about she has a plan for that. And I was really pro her plans in the beginning. I was like, hey, yeah, if this gets us our progressive agenda because she like has thoughtful, well thought out plans, great, I'm on board. However, what she ended up doing was having these detailed plans that opened up avenues of attack because of the funding sources and because of this. And the plans are not going to be able to get. So one thing that I think a lot of people have right when they criticize Bernie is that, oh, he's not going to be able to just walk in and change everything, which is 100% accurate, which is why voting for somebody who has that kind of ground support is so important, because we need to be able to push our elected officials. So essentially, she had these plans that we're going to have to change anyway, because you do have to work with Congress to get things passed like that. And they just, you know, they weren't great. you need to be a little vaguer in the primaries, because we don't know exactly how universal health care is going to get passed or what the exact specifics of that are going to look like. And to pretend like we do is ridiculous. Thirdly, like, she just picked the worst of both sides, progressive and centrism. So it's like, okay, yes, we're going to have childcare, but it's going to be means tested. And I'm like, okay, nobody's going to like that. Like, either lean all the way into progressive stuff or don't. Be centrist. It's that weird middle road is for people who won't actually be affected by her policies, but like to think that they're progressive. And so that is the problem for me.
All right, y'all. So I wasn't sure this was the Elizabeth Warren arrow.
It is. Well,
I wasn't sure I was prepared, minutes. But I am. I'm prepared. I'm grateful to be here. And this
We're
is fabulous, of
you.
Course. And I didn't think I'd be prepared, but I'm a tiny little bit prepared for the Warren bashing.
It's torn it up. This is Jenny, by the way.
I just need a little bit of tea, so do like Kermit. her pack, after she complained about the other candidates having super PACs, turns out that she has a pack that's run by a major oil industry person.
Oh, that's right.
So according to the Federal Election Commission data, Persist PAC's custodian of records and treasure is Chris Cobb. What is it? Chris Coob. I want to pronounce this right. Chris Coob, who previously worked in one of the highest ranking executive positions for the oil drilling advocacy group Securing America's Future Energy, which stands for SAFE. Safe.
Cool. Love that.
Yeah,
love that.
Gotta love the acronyms, huh?
Acronym also.
Yeah.
The company behind the disastrous Iowa caucus poll.
Same company?
Yeah. Well, it was acronym was the ones who paid whatever it was called.
Oh, okay.
So Chris Coob, the treasurer of Persist PAC, the super PAC that recently dropped $9 million on Elizabeth Warren ad buys, is the former COO of Securing America's Energy Future, a military and business-led oil advocacy group.
What could go wrong?
So yeah, I mean,
military and oil, two great tastes.
I mean, she wants
together.
To green up the military. What could go wrong?
And this was right after she complained about the other candidates taking super PAC money.
Yeah.
But she said, well, you know, it's not fair because, you know, you have Bloomberg, you have all these people, right? So they're pulling in a lot of money.
Well, Bloomberg is not pulling in any money. He just has a lot of money to spend. So there's
more
that.
More money than any human should ever have.
Yeah, I'm so.
Or any non-human.
Disappointed.
Too. Nothing should have that much money.
Nobody should have that much money. I'm just so disappointed with her because if you have all listened to our previous episodes, I was the one the whole time, Warren. And I am upset because I am a rational person. I am somebody who cares very deeply about the outcome of this election. I'm someone who does not want Trump to be in power. I am somebody who has a lot of clients who stand to materially benefit under a progressive administration. And I feel like the narrative right now is that I'm somehow like sexist because I'm choosing not to vote for Elizabeth Warren, or that I'm asking people to be pragmatic and not split the progressive vote. It's infuriating.
I just wanted to say, just to drive it home one more time, just how important this is to realize it's Biden cannot beat Trump. And the idea of the Democratic Party, the DNC, the people who are moving all this weird, as we speak right now, Buttigieg just endorsed Biden on stage. This weird Rube Goldberg machine of just marbles and balls. It's like that old mousetrap game where you put the thing and the cage comes. They're trying to work all these different things just so they can lose to Trump, just to make sure Bernie doesn't win. They are fine with Trump. That's what you have to understand. And it almost makes me mad at Bernie Sanders because I want to be like in his circle. If I was in his circle, I'd be like, sir, either way, like, you cannot play with these people. These people are out to destroy you and destroy the movement. Either way, you're going to break up the Democratic Party. Either you're going to take it over, or they're going to steal this from you and the party's going to die and Trump's going to win. You just have to come to peace with that, and that these people are not your friends, and you need to let that be known. Like, he needs to be more like Trump. He needs to come out and say, look what they are doing to try to prevent the will of your votes from happening. These are all the, instead of going, well, you know, we're gonna just do this thing the right way, and you don't agree with that. I mean they're just running over him while he's sitting here trying to like take the high road.
I don't think that's what he's doing though.
No? Tell me why I'm wrong. These are open things.
So I guess my kind of only
and
point
we'll end with this. So you got the last word
on Yeah. This. So I guess my only point is that if he did start attacking, they would just call him on that, and that might have a lot more carry with sort of like these people who haven't decided to make them to break against him. And so he's not being nice to them because, you know, playing nice or whatever, because he wants to play nice. He's doing this so that they can't turn it around on him and stick it with him.
I actually do want to agree with you, just because I've heard anecdotal stories of like people saying, "Hey, my grandparents, my mom, dad are watching the debate and they're like, I don't understand why he's the only one that talks about issues. It seems like everybody else is petty." I've seen a couple anecdotal stories like that. So you could be right. Like, could be, it's just frustrating to me.
But it's so obvious to me. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, Aaron's got like a whole like thing lined up for the show, so I got over the allotted time where I wanted to just vent about this.
Yeah, well,
turn the show over to Aaron and Jenny.
Right on the other side of Station ID, you are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is Good Morning Comrade. We have Robert, Aaron, Jeff, and Jenny Yanez in the studio, a very special guest. So, Aaron, what you got?
So, this goes on kind of dovetails quite nicely with our Warren conversation, because a lot of these people I'm going to be talking about are Warren supporters. And there has been, and again, you will probably not have seen this if you are not as terminally online as those of us in this room, but there is...
It's a disease,
there
has, folks.
I know, it's awful. But there has been this recent trend of people saying that they don't want to vote for Bernie Sanders because he is triggering to them in some way. So he triggers feelings of past abuse. They feel like he is an abusive person because he reminds them of someone who was abusive to them in the past. And it's a genuinely very disingenuous argument. And just to remind everybody, I am a licensed mental health professional, licensed in the state of Louisiana. So I feel like some authority to talk about these things and kind of why they're disingenuous. And also, just to bolster my credentials, when we're talking about trauma and we're talking about abuse and sexual assault, I have worked as a domestic abuse victim advocate on a Navy base. I ran a trauma support group at the women's prison here in Louisiana for about a year and some months. So, and I work with a lot of clients who have experienced trauma in many different forms. So
sounds like you know what you're talking about.
I know a little bit about what I'm talking about. I don't want to toot my own horn too hard, but I would imagine I know a smidge more than some of the people who are talking about it online. And I thought it would be helpful if we could do maybe a breakdown of what terminology means. And then also, because while I feel like the initial arguments are just disingenuous, I'm feeling like a lot of the pushback is also very unhelpful. So let's talk about triggers. What do you guys know about triggers as, like, quote unquote lay people?
I suppose it's a stimulus that encourages a certain reaction.
That's that.
And I'm kind of like jogging my memory and playing a little bit of jazz here. But, like, essentially, something that creates a reflexive reaction in a person based off of previous, potentially, maybe not always, but potentially based off of previous experience and potential and trauma.
That's pretty much, yeah. So the only things I would change about your answer, I'm like doing it like I do in my trauma group. So the only thing I'll change about your answer is that it's not a reflective response. It's immediate and an irrational response. Mm-hmm. And it triggers are to anything. So when
you're saying a trigger is necessarily, like a definitionally, it's irrational. It's not based on any kind of rationality. Yes.
Well, it can be and it might not be. So when we're talking about triggers, obviously when we're talking about them in this way, we're only talking about negative triggers. Because obviously a good trigger is not a bad thing, right? But essentially our brain works by making connections between two things. So all of our connections are very different. So for me, you know, hearing for you potentially as a teacher, hearing the school bell is going to have a trigger or reaction that is not going to be the same for me, right?
Right. It's subconscious and reflexive.
Yeah. And that's just how our brains work. So you can have good triggers, right? You can, particularly have a great trigger of when I hear Spice Girls, right? I don't hear it very frequently. When I hear it, I get
it. Is it what you really, really want? I'll tell you what you want,
what you really, really, really want. And I'm putting in a good mood, right? Because I'm remembering all the time when I was young. So that's a positive trigger. A neutral trigger is, oh, I know when my phone rings that I have to pick it up, or that I am, you know, oh, the phone rings. Oh, I remember I have to call so-and-so, right? That's a neutral trigger. Mm-hmm. So a negative trigger would be smelling, so potentially smelling a cologne and being triggered to think about a past assault. So that would be something that would be negative, right? So is that, are we all on board? My teacher voice.
Yes.
Cool. So what, now that we have a base understanding of triggers, we also have to understand that just because something triggers us doesn't mean that that thing is inherently wrong, okay? And that is where these conversations, I think, are so damaging online. And if you are not terminally online, some examples have been that, there was one pretty prominent writer, white feminist writer, who said that Bernie Sanders reminds her of her abusive father who used to scream at her when he was having a bad day. And she feels like Bernie's cadence and way of talking is very much like that. There was someone else I saw that said that Bernie triggers them because he points his finger a lot and their abuser used to point their finger a lot too. I've seen people write about how Bernie Sanders reminds them of a dismissive boss or someone who was harassing them in the workplace. There's just a lot of people are triggered by Bernie Sanders, it seems.
On Twitter.com.
Okay, so could this also be regional? Because I've heard a lot of people say, this is New York.
Yes.
Like, this is cultural. Mm-hmm. Like, right? And could this, I'm just going to throw out there and be really honest, y'all. Jeffrey knows me. Could this also be because he's Jewish?
Yes. And so that leads me.
And this, he's not.
Perfectly in.
You know, he's not a WASP. He's not a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male. So there's, I'm uncomfortable with that concept because I don't know what it means. I don't know what it is. So something makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what it is. So I'm triggered by something, but I'm identifying
yes,
negative
yeah,
something else.
Absolutely.
I'm not a mental health professional, so I'm asking you. I'm not.
Yeah. So that's the thing about triggers is that just because something is triggering to you does not mean that that other person is a bad person. So I'll give you an example. If somebody grew up in a family where there was a lot of, they were a loud family, right? Not in an abusive way, just let's say the stereotypical Italians
like
talking with
family,
their hands,
just an American.
You know, everybody's yelling at the same time, right? So that is, you know, somebody from that family is going to have a very different reaction to somebody speaking with a loud tone than
Buddy,
someone.
I'm from Chalmette.
Okay, so like I'm from the Upper Main Line, Pennsylvania. We're a quiet folk there, so I do have trouble around people who are very expressive and who yell a lot. Now, does that mean that the people who are expressive are bad? No. Does that mean I am wrong for feeling uncomfortable in those circumstances? No. There is no wrong in that arena. And so that's what we have to think about when we're thinking about triggers, is that a person can have triggers and they can be deeply upsetting. They can be deeply destructive. They can be deeply, they might not be lying about being triggered by Bernie Sanders, right? But that does not mean that Bernie Sanders has done anything wrong. And so there's this idea, and I think it's not a bad impulse, but to jump on the side of the victim, right? Because victims generally don't get a fair shake in our society. So it's not a bad impulse to automatically say, oh, this person is triggered, you need to change your behavior. But that's not how the world works, okay? And the reason I want to call it out so deeply is that, like I said, I was doing the trauma group in the women's prison. And those women did not expect people to change for them, should not expect people to change for them. And it would be incredibly dangerous for them to expect people to change for them. Like, let's say there was a specific guard CO who was triggering to one of my clients. And then she decided to say, hey, I don't like you because I'm triggered and this, that, and the other thing. It's gonna go badly, right? So it's just the way it's being talked about online is this perfect encapsulation of kind of white feminine victimhood and this idea that I am correct and my victimization is more important than anyone else's victimization or anyone else's ability to live. And other people need to change so that I don't have to be uncomfortable. And that's a deeply problematic space to be in. And which is why I wanted to talk about it, because it makes me crazy.
And because that's your expertise.
Yeah.
So you can talk about it with a lot of authority. And also it's something that you've noticed as with your professional eyes that other people may not have seen.
Yeah. Or noticed. I think that's probably, I'm a little bit more in tune to it.
Right. And one of the things that I thought of when you mentioned all that, and not to trivialize the importance of what the connections that you're making with people who actually have PTSD from triggers, right? Mm-hmm. Not to trivialize that. But you remember when Hillary was running and people said, well, she looks like I'm not going to vote for her because she doesn't look like I could have a beer with her. Like, yes. That argument. And I'm not saying vote for Hillary or not vote for mm-hmm. Hillary. What I'm saying is that these arguments that people have, like, oh, he doesn't seem like, or she doesn't seem like I can have a beer with them, as their decision to vote for the leader of this country.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Like if that triggered them, like, well, I don't think I can have a beer with her. Something must have triggered that. It's based on something, a perception.
Yeah. So
as well, it's not always it's not always traumatic. Sometimes it's perception.
Yeah.
Some people actually may suffer trauma, like you said, and you're not saying that if somebody has like a trigger from seeing Bernie, for example, it still has nothing to do with Bernie, but that you're not, you know, taking away from that person's trauma.
Well, so the thing is with trauma is expecting the world to change around your triggers. And this is, you know, I am 100% empathetic to anybody who's experienced trauma, and triggers are horrifying, and they can be very debilitating, and they really make life hard for a lot of people. But the reason I'm kind of harping on this is that it actually is damaging to the victim, to the survivors themselves, to expect the world to change around them, right? If we need to learn how to live with the world, and that's not to say that the world, I want society to make things harder on people who survived trauma, but the goal of treating trauma, the goal of like therapy with trauma, is to get that person. So I always say it's not to have the person forget that it happened or to make it go away, because that's never going to happen. Whatever happened to that person is always going to be awful, terrible, unexcusable. But our goal with treatment is to make it so that it is one small facet of their life story, right? So it's one thing that bad that happened to them in kind of the patchwork of the rest of their lives. So it's bad, it's terrible, they may have lasting impact for the rest of their life, but the goal is to not have that be their defining story, right? And so when we're talking about centering our trauma and having other people change and change their attitudes, change their behavior, change around that trauma, you're essentially centering the worst thing that ever happened to you as your story. And it's not good for you as the survivor, and it's not good for anybody else. It's mm-hmm. It inhibits healing, essentially.
It becomes your like main identifying characteristic, right? The fact that you survived something genuinely and truly horrible, and you're making yourself like you're basing your entire worldview on that. I can't see how that wouldn't make anything any better in a certain sense. If I might just sort of like these things are definitely real and they're definitely an issue. I do think that there are in this particular issue, specifically around like things that are highly charged and political, an intentional weaponization that takes place with this. And I think that is the issue that that's where on the clinical end, I take everything that you're saying on that. It cannot be good to have that kind of a culture being sort of like encouraged by people who are doing it for political gain.
And Aaron, but I wanted to make a distinction between people who are actually triggered and people who have perceptions and just, you know, it's a perception. They're just throwing their opinion out there. It's not the same thing.
It's not. Right? So it's not. But I really want to be careful with how we have conversations around it, because whether or not it is whether it's someone being genuine or it's someone who's weaponizing our, you know, our very great impulse to want to be on the side of survivors. Are we station ID'ing?
You're listening to WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning, Comrade.
That was good because I needed to get my little thoughts together anyway. I feel like this is such a heavy topic, but it's something I really needed to talk about. But so one of the reasons I also wanted to bring it up with this group specifically is because, yes, there is a difference between somebody who may be genuinely feeling these emotions and this PTSD and these triggers and someone who's just weaponizing because they don't like a specific candidate. However, to people who are kind of reading and looking at and seeing the responses, there isn't that distinction. So I really want us as leftists, as people who are kind of fighting against these kind of arguments, to be really careful with our language, because we don't want to, you know, whether or not that person is genuine. Number one, err on the side that they are genuine, right? It won't hurt. But also know that just because they are genuinely triggered doesn't mean that, you know, that argument stands. But you just don't want somebody who has also gone through a really awful situation, a very traumatic situation, to see a bunch of leftists like, F you, like, you're lying, like, you're stupid, your triggers don't matter. Like, I've seen a lot of, oh, sorry, your dad yelled at you, I want healthcare, which is like, yeah, a fine thing to think, but like not particularly helpful, right? If I was a survivor looking at that and hadn't made up my mind, I'd be like, okay, cool. Well, I don't like, this is not a movement that wants me. And so we really need to be like better about our conversations, better about the way we react to things, because yes, they are often very ingenuous. Disingenuous, that's the word. They're often very disingenuous. But one of the things about being a leftist and being a progressive is that we've chosen the high road. We've chosen the harder road to follow, because helping other people is harder than not. And so this is one of those burden to bear things that where we just have to be more aware of our language.
So, Erin, because you are a professional, mm-hmm. and you are so in tune with this, and you identified what triggers were, and so did Jeffrey. He gave a pretty good definition, huh, mm-hmm. of triggers?
Yeah, I think so.
What if somebody doesn't realize that they're triggered, or that they don't know why this person triggers them, but they feel free, like you said, because of privilege, mm-hmm. to express it and feel entitled to it? If you know someone like that, what do you point it out? I mean, what do you do? What do you tell them?
It's so difficult.
Because it affects you,
yeah,
as a person, not just as a therapist or as a professional counselor. Counselor, is that correct?
Social worker, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, girl.
Similar.
it's different if you're in that kind of a relationship, client relationship, as if it was if you're having a conversation in this room with someone.
Yeah.
And then you would be able to say, listen, you know, it seemed like you were triggered by that, but you may need to talk to someone. I mean, what would you say to a friend?
I mean, to a friend
that talked like that.
You know, hey, it sounds like, you know, you have something deeper going on, because that's, you know, I didn't hear that same thing when we talked about that. I didn't get that same emotion when he spoke. So
just really quick, I like how you handled that when you said it sounds like you're having a hard time or you've having this particular kind of reaction. You're not saying you had this reaction. You're saying, it sounds to me, so this is my perception of what you're doing, as opposed to this is what I'm telling you what you're doing or how you are or whatever.
Yeah,
and that's
always
important.
It's always more helpful to use I statements. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you remember from elementary school. I mean, assuming that we still do
Most
that
people
without.
Don't.
Oh my gosh, do we not do I statements anymore because of testing?
I statement is very social worky.
I know.
And it's very healthy.
It is. But healthy. I know it sounds, I always feel like
I choose A, B, C, or D on the test.
I feel insane when you do this thing. No, so essentially, you just try and center it. You kind of use statements, so that'd be saying you were triggered versus I felt like there was something else going on, or I felt like maybe he triggered an emotion in you. That, you know, it's less accusatory. And then we can also talk about something called transference and countertransference, if we're just going to go like full therapy today. So essentially, transference and countertransference are when. Those are terms for the therapist themselves. Like, so for us, when we have a certain reaction to a client that isn't in line with our actual interaction with the client. And that would be like, oh, I am really irritated by this client and I can't figure out why. And oftentimes, if you dig a little deeper, it's like, oh, they remind me of so and so, so and so, so and so, right? I've had clients who remind me of family members, and then I'm like, oh, that's why I'm like, I have this underlying feeling of irritation. And in that case, best practice is to go talk to your supervisor, figure out kind of exactly what it is that you're reacting to, figure out if you feel like you can work with that person or if that they would be better served switching to a different therapist. What we don't do is tell that client that they're wrong and they need to change their behavior to make us more comfortable. It's a full recognition that the onus is on us. Now, that's countertransference. Transference is when a client might do that with their therapist. So that would be like the client doesn't like you because they remind you, you have the same hair color and glasses as their mom, who they hate.
Do you think this is happening to Bernie more than to other candidates? I mean, honestly, your opinion.
I think a lot of that is happening to Warren, but on the opposite, so on a like a more positive end. Like I've also seen a lot of oh my God, she just seems like she'd be the person to like greet you with a hot mug of cocoa when your boyfriend breaks up with you. She gives like strong mom energy. Oh my God, I just want to eat Girl Scout cookies with her by the fire while we just listen to K-pop or whatever. It's like that is transference.
Hold on, who says this?
That is like a thing.
And you're actually talking about a woman in the race, but a lot of people get triggered by Trump.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the Democratic candidates and you're talking about Bernie and running in the Democratic race. Notice how I did that. But a lot of people are triggered by Trump. I mean, I gotta be honest. And it's I think they call it the Trump effect or something. I don't know. There is an actual thing.
So that
there.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think that's really important to when you are triggered by something to have that. Because like sometimes you're triggered by things that are like very good, like not good, but like very normal and natural to be triggered by. Right. Mm-hmm. So with Trump, he says a lot of like insanely racist things.
And he cultivates that kind of reaction as well. He does that intentionally to make people upset.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Like when he spoke about that reporter.
Yes. Right? Yeah. When he, so if y'all don't remember, kind of made a very, he just imitated a reporter who has a disability. He's kind of made, you know, it's like when people do that pretending like they have Down syndrome voice.
Yeah, he tried to imitate him, basically. He tried to imitate him. But that was, it should have offended everybody who saw that.
Yes. And so
it should have offended you.
So a way to check is if your trigger is something that is very unique to your own situation versus something that you should be and are rightfully upset about is to kind of think about, to take yourself out of the equation. So when I talk to clients about this, I'm like, okay, think about if your best friend was having this reaction, what would you tell them? Ask people, hey, I was really upset when that happened. See, like gauge the reaction, right? Think about, just try and like depersonalize it as much as possible. So if you're feeling like, hey, I was really triggered when, you know, that car was was the car alarm was going off. That really triggered. I was really upset about that. Asking around, hey, did that upset you as well? Oh, no, it wasn't that big a deal to me. Okay, well, maybe that's something that's personal to me and that I should dig a little deeper in. Hey, were you triggered when Trump said that all Mexicans were rapists? Yeah, no, that was really effed up. That was like not a great thing to say. Oh, okay, cool. So you know yourself better than anybody else in the entire world. You are the subject matter expert on yourself. And so you will start to understand kind of like what are your, especially when you start looking for them, you'll start to understand what are your personal triggers versus what are things that are just you're upset about because they're worth being upset about. And that's not to say that triggers aren't worth being upset about because they're real and honest and they're your brain. They're not made up. You're having like real, genuine emotional reactions. It's just more, how are they affecting your life? How are they fitting in your life? How are they making it harder for you? Like, think about it. Is being upset at Trump making it harder for you to live your daily life?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, it is. But is it, are you being like...
Just the knowledge... This is turned personal now for me. Okay. But just the knowledge that we've allowed this for so long, it makes me look at myself and everyone around me as we're much more complacent than we thought we were.
Okay, so do you feel like that knowledge is a hindrance to you?
Yeah.
In what way?
It's changed my life. Because every day I look at everyone else and I demand, I want to know why people aren't doing more. And then I look at myself and I say, I'm not doing more. And then sometems you get burned out and tired. And when I'm not doing enough, then I don't trust myself. Mm-hmm. Like, because this person is just doing such horrible things. And I'm having lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe I need to that. I mean, yeah, maybe I need to meet you in private. Here comes my loud Cuban voice. maybe I need to pay for the therapy sessions privately. But yeah, it does. It just bothers me on that constant. But like to see, like for example, those people that you said, to bring it back to the top of the hour, mm-hmm. when y'all were talking about Bernie, that some people are like, I don't like the way he points, or I don't like what he does this or what he does that, versus consistent every day reading the stupid Twitter, ridiculous, mm-hmm. complete nonsense day after day, and that we just have accepted this as normality. That is crazy. And I know crazy is not a medical, it's not a mental health term, y'all.
I know.
It's
not. Something I'm really bad about, actually.
It's a radio DJ term, but it's not a mental health term.
No, yeah, it's actually, it's very ableist. And that's one of the ones using crazy, insane.
Oh,
those are all. Too. Yeah, I don't catch myself, but it is something I am trying
to change.
Just
try to do better,
yeah.
I suppose.
I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm learning. No, I'm not using it as a mental health term.
Oh,
I'm
no.
I'm just saying, I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
Pressing.
I mean, I wish I had, because we've had conversations on the podcast in the past about those feelings, because like for me personally, I deal with my clients data. Like for instance, I work in housing, and like many of my clients did not pay their rent last month for one reason or another. And so I've been like kind of bopping around trying to make sure no one gets evicted for the past week. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also running for OpDec District A here in New Orleans. So I've been trying to figure out that. And then also just like, where do I fit in like the greater? I'm like gesturing like, you guys can see me. You can't see me. It's the radio.
If you're watching.
Oh, you can see me. There's a live stream. Hello. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to prioritize. It's hard to feel like you deserve a break at all. But you do, because all of our energy is finite. And so you have to you burning yourself out is not helpful to the cause, and it's not helpful to the people around you, and it's not helpful to getting Trump out of office, right? So it's just prioritizing what you feel like you care about the most, and also what you feel like you can be the most effective at.
And to be, because I've experienced this myself too. I mean, I burn the candle at both ends and in the middle sometimes. I find, at least, when I am sort of more emotionally rested and like feeling much more healthy, I'm much more effective at the things that I'm trying to do, which is, you know, calling people, texting, emailing, writing, and reading. You know, but sometimes you just got to play Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney for a couple of hours, you know?
Yeah,
sometimes you need to play some video games or whatever it is that chills you out.
I watched 8 episodes of Love is Blind this past weekend. Gonna finish it tonight, probably. So hashtag self-care.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, and you can go too far with that and make self-care just your entire identity, just like you could do for other things. Or you can make sort of like self-anesthetization. You could take that to the extreme, to the point where you remove yourself so much from the political situation that there's nothing you could do that you can do that other than sort of talk about how bad everything is. And that's all of these things are understandable outcomes, but the kind of behavior that they encourage, not only are they unhealthy outcomes, they're also in service to the things that you're fighting against.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we say, you know, in terms of, you know, fighting the boss and things like that, if you're always too, you know, burnt out to actually fight the boss and all you're doing is talking about how bad the boss is, then the boss is fine with that. They don't care.
Yeah. This is why it's so important to find a movement mm-hmm. that is not all doom and gloom, that it has positivity involved in it, that it has hope in it, and that it has
high hopes, would you say?
High hopes in the limit.
You're listening to WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning Comrade. We have Jenny Yanez is a very special guest. We also have Aaron and Robert in the booth. So we're talking about triggers and mental health and self-care and all kinds of really cool
stuff. Honestly, like one
stuff.
Of the things you can do for yourself that will make you feel instantly better is to, especially when it comes to this kind of work, just figure out something that's going to have an instant gratification involved in it. Because sometimes a win can really just boost your spirits.
Potato chips, perhaps.
I'm saying, so, okay, let's say you're on the political.
I feel so seen. I feel so seen, y'all.
Chef, that's the call out. Chef is very perceptive. No, but like, for instance, if you're canvassing, try to canvass, like go to a house where you know that they're already a Bernie supporter or a whoever supporter, right? Because having a conversation with someone who is like already on board with you, you're going to feel so much better, right? Don't make things harder for yourself. If you're having a day where you're feeling drained and stressed out, don't do the thing that's the hardest thing you have to do. Do the easiest thing. Do texting instead of calling, maybe, right? Because it's a little bit easier and less demoralizing to have someone be mean to you via text message than to your face, right? So just like, for instance, I will, if I'm feeling burnt out during the day, I will go to one of my clients' house that I know has their ish together, just because, or that I've helped get their ish together, because I can go there and be like, oh, cool, that's right. Like, here's somebody who's like really doing well. And that makes me feel good because it means that I'm like better at my job than sometimes I think. I don't go like, obviously if there's an emergency or something, but if I'm having a tough time, I don't intentionally schedule myself with my more difficult clients, right? I'll wait till a day that I'm feeling a little better about stuff. Yeah.
And you know, not everybody can do that, Dorian. Let's be real.
Well, I know. We all need to learn ourselves better.
No. Sometimes we have to face a difficult situation and we have to take all of us with.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying never face the difficult situation.
Well, you're talking about self-care tips.
Yeah, it's just more how to make sure you don't burn out, because it's a long haul thing. Trump is like a straight up nightmare person. And if you were to get upset about every single thing he says or does, you're going to burn out.
So have a plan beforehand. Don't wait till you freak yes. out. That's
oh my God.
What I'm hearing you
say. Jenny,
saying.
Thank you. Yes.
No, thank you.
Have a plan beforehand.
I'm just hoping you won't send me a bill after today.
Yes.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Having a self-care plan is knowing, take stock of what you know will trigger you, right? Know that you don't have to actually be on Twitter. You don't have to do it. You don't have to read President Trump's tweets. I blocked him.
I do.
He's blocked. I don't read him because I don't feel like, I'm like, I already know he's a racist person and a terrible human being and not very good at his job. I don't need to read one more tweet that tells me that, right? I already know. So I block myself. I intentionally don't watch movies with violence or that are sad because I know that about myself. I don't need that in my life. Yeah, it's just one of those things. But join a movement. It doesn't even have to be like a formal thing. Be with friends who can support you, who are not going to force you to take on more work than is healthy for you, who are not going to judge you if you admit that you're feeling low, if you're having a tough time. Who can maybe take over the mantle of work for a little while you take care of yourself and then pick it right back up. That's why movements, it's all about movements. It's not about individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're humans. We're going to have times when we're going to need to take a step back. Mm-hmm. And it's important that the movement continues and that those kind of some people taking a step back are going to be, you know, that's built into the plan. So don't feel bad about that, but also like don't spend your energy doing dumb things, Robert. Maybe stop fighting Simone Sanders on Twitter.
Maybe that is self-care for him.
It actually really is. It goes back to what Jenny's talking about, because what Jenny said, I think it's a little bit different, and I don't want, like, everything you're saying is correct, but when you come at it from like a different, okay, so when you're like, oh, fall back from this, fall back from that, that's cool and all, but like, I walk around in my black skin all day, and Jenny walks around in her hijab. We don't get an opportunity to fall back. Like, we are constantly on alert all the time. Like, I work in Covington. I'm like, when I pull up to somebody, which is like, it, like the really like hillbilly side of Louisiana. So when somebody pulls up to me, like in my little Bernie car, and they've got like a Trump flag hanging out, I have to think like, oh, can I take this guy in a fight? That's where I'm at. And I might be really being a little crazy.
No.
But that's where my head's at. So when I wear like we were out yesterday, we went and got something to eat, and I'm like, I'm going to wear my Bernie shirt. That's like an act. I might as well be wearing like Black Panther, like Marcus. It'd be safer for me to wear a Marcus Garvey shirt because nobody would know who that is. It'd be like, is that CeeLo Green? Like, who is that?
All right.
But you know what I mean? But. Don't, like, don't so that's
disrespect that's, the man's memory like that. My God.
But
CeeLo's?
No. Marcus Garvey's out. Get out. Out. Oh my God.
But there's just time where you just can't turn it off. So you're always on high alert, and that's where it comes out. It comes out in like prolonged Twitter fights. And anybody who interacts with us, I just want to make this clear. Like, I think I definitely forget sometimes. If you're interacting with a Good Morning Comrade account on Twitter, it's always me. So it's like,
it is 100% never me.
Yeah, it's putting it's that never out anybody else. So you're always interacting with Robert. But yeah, it's hard to turn it off when there's like constant pressure. I've had this conversation with a therapist at work, this white lady, and she goes, I just don't care about any of them. I don't want to talk about politics ever. And I go, look, we're friends. I think we're friends. You're a good person. You know, I like you. But you're able to do that because your privilege allows you to do that. Because you know at the end of the day, you don't go around saying it, but subconsciously you know politics doesn't matter to you because no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. Like, Aaron and I have conversations like, man, should we have kids? Should we bring a black child into the world? Like, is that a thing like we should do? Like, I don't know, because this place is crazy. I don't know if you want to like if we want to raise somebody right now. And it's just, it's hard to tell people. People should be falling back. People should be checking in with their mental health. But it's just like, you have to have a lot of respect for people who cannot, for various reasons, cannot quote unquote turn it off, because it's not a game. I've had the same conversation with my mom. But like, everybody doesn't know, like, I'm black, but I'm mixed. So my mom's white, my dad's black. And my mom's like, why are you like, I never really raised you to be political. I go, Mom, I didn't have a choice. I have no choice to be political or not. Like, you, like a lot of people, they get to have a choice. Like me, I'm fighting out the womb. So we just have to be respectful for that, of that too.
Which
what you said, either me or either my daughter or I have said recently. My daughter's running for, can I plug, student government, SGA vice president, on a ticket for in Loyola University. And she wears a headscarf. Yeah, she wears a headscarf. And she had that conversation with a classmate. And she had to say, listen, you could choose to be political or not, but all my life I haven't had that choice. I'd had to be. Mm-hmm. Right? And she's only 19. And she's realized this. And, you know, this is informed what she wants to study and what she wants to do. And she realized, I have no choice but to fight, because I can't wait for other people to fight for me. I have to, you know, I have to fight first and foremost, even not just for me, but for others as well, because I know what it feels like, especially because I know what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the other day I went outside my house and they had like a crawfish party. Y'all, they put out this huge Trump flag. You can see it straight outside my window. Now, to the left of me, my neighbor next door had a huge Rasponi sign a couple like a month before that, and or some time before that, whenever the election was November, right? So we're now in somehow still in the winter.
March. It's March.
Thanks. So there was a Rasponi sign forever, and we know like he's a ginormous racist, right? He ran for governor of Louisiana. Yeah. Thankfully, he lost. And then that sign came down because, of course, he lost, but it was also the elections were over. And then shortly after, my neighbors to the right of me across the street put out this ginormous Trump flag. And my daughter has to walk out of the house every day, get in her car by herself to drive to school and see this. This is her neighborhood. These are her neighbors. And this is not just like a political party. This it doesn't trigger her. See, it empowers her. Mm. And this is, so different people have different reactions to stuff. It triggers me, but it has empowered my daughter. And I'm glad and I hope I was able to give her some of that ability.
Yeah.
But it does add weight to, it's like what you said. You know, you walk out and people treat you, you know, you can identify as mixed race, but when you walk out, you're black.
Right.
Right. So my daughter, you know, identifies as Latina, but she doesn't know when somebody's looking at her. Right. They see her with a headscarf. In their mind, they might be triggered and say she's a terrorist. Right. And she got to deal with that.
Yeah.
So she recognizes what other people's triggers are when they look at her. Mm-hmm. And that's a weight that you have as a 19-year-old that builds up. But for me, seeing that flag out there and knowing like, well, I had to teach my kids that, you know, you're going to see these things out there. And what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah,
it's become a symbol of hate.
To me. It has, for sure.
Right? To me, it's not about, oh, it's just a Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching my neighbors idolize Reagan. I grew up in Little Havana. They idolized the man. And of course, I had a different reaction as an adult to it. But I grew up watching that, right? So this is different. Maybe it's because I'm older and I understand and I've taught my kids differently, but to me it's a sign of hate. And I'm not teaching my kids to be triggered, but when they see that, they're like, those people, they may look at me and they may be triggered by me, so I have to be prepared to know how they're going to deal with me.
Absolutely.
So you have to understand your triggers and understand what triggers other people.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna just say one more thing. When I fly, right, flying while Muslim is kind of like driving while black. So when I fly, and I mean, it's not as bad, obviously.
Well, we're not going to rank it.
I'm not going to compare whose oppression is worse. I will never do that. But when I'm in the airplane, I used to have a great fear of flying. And I, you know, thank God I don't have that anymore, but I had a great fear of flying. And one of my fears was that I would trigger somebody else. Because when they see me all worried or crying or upset, and they're like, oh, I don't get to be upset. See, because I wear a headscarf, I don't get to be upset. If I'm upset, that means something is wrong with the entire plane. Whereas if somebody else is upset, they're just upset. So I can't afford to be upset on a plane. So I have to be calm, not just for myself, but for everybody else there, because I don't want them to feel bad.
So I'm so sorry that has been a thing that you felt.
Look at her practicing her
skills.
No, that's a truly awful thing to be taking on, that you're feeling like when you fly, in addition to your own natural, you know, kind of normal, natural fears of flying, you're now feeling like you are responsible for the emotional well-being of every other person on that plane. That's a lot.
We need to take it out. We need to take us out of the regular show. You can listen. I think if y'all can stay, we can continue the conversation and release it on Thursday, because I think we have a whole lot going. I have a lot of questions too, but we have to say goodbye because of time. So you were listening to WHIV LP New Orleans. This is Good Morning Comrade. Check out all of our info at goodmorningcomrade.com. Love you. Bye.